Hi, and welcome to the first ever episode of our podcast
called Tales from the Midnight Society. This is a Canadian podcast where we're going to tell stories about all things paranormal, extraterrestrial, true crime, and bizarre. All of these things that are happening in Canada.
Yeah, but we definitely welcome visitors from all around the world to come check out our Canada Bay stories.
Canada Bay stories, yes.
Canada Bay stories. So I guess I'll tell you a little bit about our name, Tales from the Midnight Society. If you don't know, it is a play on Are You Afraid of the Dark, which is a Canadian story about kids in a club called the Midnight Society who sat around a fire and told paranormal, sometimes extraterrestrial, like creepy stories. And since they are Canadian, we're Canadian, we just decided to kind of play on that to bring you this podcast.
Yeah, we wanted to turn it into like an adult storytelling podcast where we kind of follow the same theme, but are telling stories that are even more messed up.
And we curse.
Yes.
So do you want to tell them a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So my name is Demetria. I'm Greek and Italian, but I was born in Canada. When I was a kid, I used to love reading scary stories. It was like my favorite thing. I used to go over the I used to go under the covers, I should say, with a flashlight, like old school, like you see in the movies, and read all of the scary stories and then not sleep because I was scared. So I thought that it would be a good idea.
You would bring you to the point of not sleeping so that because you're scared.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I thought it would be a good idea to start something like this so I can actually sleep at night, but still continue to listen to stories. Also, I have 3 cats and I'm excited to be here.
She's excited. So I'm Ashley. I'm Canadian born and raised. I've also, like Demetria, always loved all things spooky, unexplained. Didn't really scare easy as a child, so I just kind of dove right into horror movies. And
lucky you.
So I am an animal enthusiast and a tarot dabbler. I have 3 cats as well, and a dog. And I am currently engaged. I put my hand up like you guys can see a ring on my finger, but you can't because this is voice.
It's there. I promise.
It's there. So we're really glad that you guys are here. We're also nervous. This is our first time.
This is my first time.
You're breaking our virginity.
Oh my God.
I hope that you guys are still here by the end of this. If you're not, maybe come back for episode 2. It might get better.
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll try and be better, but this is new for us.
It's a learning curve. It is a learning curve. Every week, we're going to cover one story, not really in any pattern.
No.
Just paranormal, extraterrestrial, true crime, bizarre, conspiracy, whatever. We're going to pick a topic. We're going to tell you a story. We'll try to hint at next week's story in this, like the current episode that you're listening to, so that you know what to look forward to, but we don't know sometimes, so don't hold us to that.
And we have a very long list that we're going to try and work through.
Yeah, for sure. Like, for example, I do in fact know that next week, Demetria will be telling you a true story.
I won't tell you who it's about, but I will tell you that it's about one creepy guy who also happens to be Canadian, and he is really messed up, and it's one of my favorite stories, so stay tuned for that.
Yeah. Today, we are diving into some extraterrestrial, because who doesn't want to learn about aliens the first time checking us out?
Yeah, exactly. And this, my understanding is this story is going to be a good one.
Yeah. So Demetria is actually the one that put Falcon Lake on the list, but I scooped it.
she scooped it.
I'm a thief. I will just be honest with you guys right now. Out of all of the things that we are going to talk about on this podcast, extraterrestrial is probably the least interest to me personally. Alien movies were the only movies that scared me as a child. I'm so uncomfortable by like all things alien. Like, I don't even think I believe 100% that aliens are real. I don't know what I believe, but like, I know that aliens are like not my jam.
You know what? I kind of agree. They scare me for sure. I think the impending doom of the universe and things being out there that could like possibly kill us is not always fun.
Yeah.
But I think they're interesting stories. And this one I had heard about just because it was like the biggest alien story in Canada, or the most popular alien story in Canada, or something to that effect. And I didn't know anything about it. And I was like, this is some Area 51 type shit. So I was like, I'm putting this on it because I want to learn. I want to know what's going on in Canada and all the weird things that are happening.
Exactly. So. Well, true. And I decided to do it because, you know, You're not living your life unless you're fucking with the shit that you don't want to fuck with.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So it actually, Dimitri kind of said most popular. It's actually not. Well, it is. It's like, it's not really the most popular because it's not the most well-known. Like, a lot of people don't know about this one. There's more falsified ones that are a little bit more well-known. Like, they're not 100% falsified. They just become so fabricated over time that they're more well-known than this story. This story mostly stems, actually, well, my research mostly stems off the Government of Canada website. So it's actually the most documented, like officially documented, like government documented UFO encounter in Canada. So that's cool. It's actually in the world, one of the most UFO encounters that have been documented. Like just the amount of documentation by government officials on this encounter. It's crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah. We're showing up the states is what I'm saying.
Yeah, like Canada's got some cool aliens.
cool is being used lightly here.
We've got some aliens. I mean, yeah. I'm going to take you to Falcon Lake. Let's go. So on May 20th, 1967, in Falcon Lake, Manitoba, well, more specifically, north of Falcon Lake, Manitoba, Stephen Michalak. Is how I'm going to say it. If I'm butchering that and anyone knows I'm butchering that.
We apologize.
I apologize. Yeah. So.
How Canadian of us. Yeah. Anyway, continue.
So May 20th, 1967, Stephen Michalak went on a trip to Whiteshell Provincial Park just north of Falcon Lake. So he's out. He's exploring. He's doing his hiking thing. And he stopped for lunch. And he's sitting. So he sees two disc-shaped objects in the sky. The first object hovers 10 feet off the ground, just like stays and hovers 10 feet off the ground. And the other one lands about 100 feet from him.
Oh God.
Yeah. Okay. It's a lot. It's a lot.
We're already in the story. Yeah,
we're
Jesus.
In we're I'm diving in. So being the person that he is, the Manitoban, he hides. He hides for 30 minutes. Nonetheless, he says in an interview with an RCMP officer that he was hiding to watch in amazement. So he hides.
So he was literally like, he sees these UFOs or these objects because he doesn't know what they are, I'm assuming.
No, flying saucer.
And he's like, I'm just going to go over here and just observe.
From behind a rock.
From literally behind a rock.
From behind a rock.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. So he describes in the same RCMP interview, he describes the object as metallic in color, 30 feet in diameter, and approximately 12 feet tall. You can check out these RCMP interviews on the Government of Canada website, which is cool.
Right. There, all of this is documented on the
government. All of it. So I'm going to touch base on this more at the end, but yes.
Oh, God.
Yes, for now. So he also sketches pictures of the ship, like hand sketch pictures, and you can view his actual sketches on mysteriousuniverse.org. And that's where I found the interview with Stephen's son, which is where some of my resources come from, but most of them are Government of Canada interviews and stuff.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So after 45 minutes, a door opens and bright violet light pours out. And when I read this online, I just like imagined like,
yeah.
Even though, like, that's not what happens, but.
Like an episode of Riverdale.
Yeah.
I just imagine, like, smoke and, like, light shining through it that's purple, and then this, like, big UFO.
Yeah. So he claims that when the door opens, he hears voices and he notes them as very high pitch. So they're just high pitch voices. What happens next varies. So. Depending on the source of my research. So I wrote down both for you guys. I thought that I needed to tell you both because they're so different and funny. And I think you're going to enjoy this. So that's what it is.
All right.
All right.
Let's go.
The Canadian government states that after hearing the voices, he calls out to the voices in several languages. These languages include English, German, Italian, Polish, Ukrainian, and Russian.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
How does he know all of these languages?
Right? Like, he's like, I just happen to know six languages and I'm going to try and speak to the spacecraft in all six.
Just if they happen to be from all of these respective countries, yeah. I'm just going to like shout it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or like if this alien has observed them maybe and knows this just language, but not speak. English. Yeah.
Just be like, ciao.
Ciao. That's goodbye. Yes.
No, it's both hello and goodbye. Oh. I know this because I'm Italian. We confirmed this in the beginning.
I'm uncultured. It's fine.
She's not, but it's fine.
No culture.
Continue.
I'm actually German and Irish, to clarify. Like, I'm from Canada.
She's like,
I'm Canadian, but like, I look like a little Irish child, so it's fine.
That's true.
Yeah. So the Canadian government says he spoke six languages. But an interview with the source from The Mysterious Universe, which is like a book author that worked closely with his son, and his son kind of said that he said, "Come out, Yankee boys. I can help fix your broken down flying machine."
I have many questions.
Like,
one, could he have actually fixed this UFO that he had that he knew nothing about?
I don't know. And two, why'd he call them Yankee boys?
Yeah.
So his son says that he originally thought that they could be an American, like, experimental vehicle.
That's hilarious.
Literally. But their stories differ so much. And I don't know if it's like the Canadian government being like, that's embarrassing. Let's not put this in our report. Or if the son is just pulling shit out his ass.
It's probably true.
But the stories are so different. Or he could have said both. He could have tried to say hi in a bunch of different languages and then said the Yankee. But like, who knows? But both were so...
They're so different.
They're so different.
But also like so weird, mm-hmm. and so specific to whatever happened.
But like, why? Yeah. Like, which one is true? Yeah. I mean, I would assume the government of Canada wouldn't lie, but at the same time, this is the guy's son.
Yes.
So I don't know.
Well, maybe he told his son a different story when he got home.
Yeah.
Who knows?
So both sources claimed that immediately after he said whatever he said, the inhabitants were then spooked and closed the hatch. So of course, hatch being closed, he is now curious, and the fear that kept him behind the rock for 45 minutes has apparently dissipated. So he walks up to the ship and he touches it. It's also May in Manitoba, so he's wearing gloves, and the heat of the ship burns through his gloves, and his hands then receive burns.
Wait, it was cold enough to be wearing gloves in May, Manitoba?
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, it gets pretty cold here. Like, we live in Ontario, just to clarify, and it gets pretty cold here in May, but like, not, well, I guess it is that cold in May.
If we have any Manitoba listeners at any point, I hope we do in our first episode or couple episodes, get at us about May temperatures.
Because
we have no idea.
Yeah. We're just out here.
Not knowing. Yeah. So as soon as he touches it, the ship spins, and a vent is now facing him as the ship takes off. So I'm assuming the ship spun to take off. Mm. As the ship takes off, he is blasted with a force of hot air. The blast burns his clothing and leaves a mark on his chest in the shape of the vent. He immediately feels ill and begins to vomit. And he says literally, like in a quote to the RCMP officer, he smelled a metallic smell coming from inside his body.
Like blood? Like he smelled his own blood?
I don't know if it's blood or, I don't know. I don't know if it's blood. I don't know. He smells metallic.
Because blood tastes metallic, but does it smell metallic?
That's what I mean. Like, who knows? Anyway, so then he headed towards the highway, flagged down an RCMP car. The RCMP report states that he refused a treatment initially, but then the interview with the son said that he immediately sought medical treatment. So that's another discrepancy that I don't have answers to. On May 26th, though, he was in the hospital. So that's 6 days later. So I don't know if he had just gone to the hospital that day after refusing medical treatment, like the Canadian government says, yeah. Or if he was in the hospital for 6 days because I don't know.
So you said he got burned by the vent.
Mm-hmm.
So assumingly his burns were bad, but he would have been in the hospital for longer if they were severe.
Yeah.
So,
well, they're pretty severe because on May 26th, CJ Davis of the RCMP met with Stephen and became interested in the difficult to explain nature of his burns. So they're like pretty severe, but also the shape and whatever about them makes them like strange, like weird.
Yeah. So much so the RCMP
wanted to come back and look at his burns. Yeah.
Also, we should clarify who the RCMP are and what they do.
Yeah. So sorry. For all our non-Canadian listeners or just anyone who doesn't know, the RCMP is the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
And they're just like extra strength cops.
Yeah.
Like, they are above cops, but then I think there's another level of police above them.
We are clearly not educated on what they are either, but at least I knew what the acronym was.
Did I say it wrong?
No. I'm just saying, like, we don't have a lot of details about what the RCMP are or do. We're going to take a brief intermission as both of Demetria's cats are currently on the counter.
What the heck?
And we're back. So
there was two furries on the counter.
They were getting into trouble in the sink.
We were like telling the story and like both shifting our eyes towards the counter because we were like, should we continue or should we kick the furry assholes off?
Yes.
And then the second one jumped up and I was like, this needs to stop now.
Yeah. So on May 31st, the RCMP launched an investigation, but didn't find anything. On June 31st, the RCMP, still curious about what the fuck was going on, tried a second or third, of, I guess, third investigation at this point. Second investigation? They tried again.
Yes.
This time bringing Stephen to help search for the site. But when they found nothing, they decided to chalk up Stephen's story to being drunk.
So when they did the first investigation, did they try and go back to the site?
So, sorry, to clarify, from what I read, it sounds like they, on May 31st, tried to go there by themselves without Stephen, but like had no idea where he was, combed the park for hours and found nothing.
I'm assuming it's a big park though, if it's a provincial park as well.
Yeah, for sure. And then on June 31st, they were like, we didn't find anything, we need to go with him. But he had walked for hours into the park.
Mm.
He then ran scared and sick to out of the park.
Yeah.
So he had no idea where the fuck he was. Yeah. So when he couldn't find it, they were like, hey, you're drunk, we're gonna close the case.
They were like, that guy's been drinking too much maple syrup. We're closing the case.
So then on June 26th, Stephen, having been pretty much driven insane by the fact that they called him a drunk when he wasn't drinking, he had not been drinking, he decided to go find the site on his own. So the RCMP, he then called the RCMP, sorry, and they returned to gather evidence. They gathered pieces of burnt clothing, steel tape, rocks, and soil samples.
He had a point to prove.
He did.
He wanted
them to
know.
He was like, how dare they?
Yeah.
How dare they? On July 24th, so almost a month later, the samples were returned to the RCMP officers after being sent into the government Department of Health and Welfare. The samples came back radioactive.
Wow.
And a memo was sent to the RCMP, and I have the exact memo, so I'm going to read it to you.
Okay.
UFO reported by Stephen Michalak. Lab tests here indicate earth samples taken from scene highly radioactive, period. And then it said, and then it on the memo, it just says area wanted restriction.
So they wanted to restrict the area because of radioactiveness.
Yeah.
Wow. And I'm assuming
that it was highly, it wasn't, they just said highly radioactive. So it's not like, hey, this has got a little bit of radioaction. Like they were like, This is friggin' glowing.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's actually glowing.
It was green and glowing. It wasn't violet anymore. So is there any chance that the area could have been radioactive previous to this
happening? Well, no, it's a provincial park. So it's like it's a maintained provincial park. Like the provincial park would have known if something was fucked in that area.
Yeah, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And it's not like radioactive spots just come up just because. I'm assuming something would have had to happen.
Yeah, no, for sure. It actually reminds me of like the Simpsons and like their radioactive plant. I need to stop talking.
I don't know what episode you're talking about.
No, like in general, how he works at like the power plant everything is radioactive. Yes.
Oh my God. I don't really watch The Simpsons. Like,
me neither.
I've watched a couple episodes, but like.
I just know that. That's all I know. I just know. It's in the intro. Like all you have to do is know the intro.
Apparently I've never watched a single episode of The Simpsons before.
Like he's working at the power plant. Okay, anyway.
Okay.
If you haven't seen it, it's fine. On July 25th, so a day after they were told to restrict the area, the Department of Health and Welfare sent someone to investigate. On July 27th, it's a couple days later, the RCMP officer, CJ Davis, his squad leader, so now his boss is involved, and Hunt from the Department of Health and Welfare approached Stephen to take them all back to the site. Which, okay, I need to pause to say the fact that it confuses the living shit out of me how they have, at this point, been visiting the site for 2 months.
Yep.
And had to go to Stephen to take them back.
I mean, he found it, though.
Yeah, but it's the same RCMP officers. Are they not marking it?
especially because they were supposed to restrict it. So did
like legitimately so many, but this is the like dates on the Government of Canada website and like the actual like order of events on the Government of Canada website. And it just confuses me so much. 2 months later, why this random man is still involved in their investigation and taking them to this place.
Yeah. It's like the RCMP officer was like,
I can't quite remember.
I just like didn't Google Maps. I guess it's 1967. Google Maps is not around, but he was like, I didn't
write down the coordinates.
I didn't put it on the map of Manitoba.
Manitoba.
With my tooth gone. I don't know why we're going southern. But okay. Anyway.
So on July 28th, they investigated the site and found an abandoned. It doesn't say abandoned. It says abnormal, guys. It's fine. It's okay.
It's our first episode.
I'm 80 years old and I handwrite all my notes. And that makes it hard because I'm reading Ashley gibberish that I wrote late at night when researching this now and being like, what does that word say that I scribbled there? Anyway, okay, so they found an abnormal area of moss that had been removed in a semicircle. What does that sound like to you? Does that sound like a crop circle?
Just a little bit.
Yeah. So they don't call it a crop circle. They call it a semicircle. But it's directly at where Stephen says the landing site was.
So... they literally, there's like a patch of moss missing, you said? Yeah. And it's radioactive.
In a semicircle, but like in like a perfectly formed semicircle.
Oh, God. And it's radioactive.
Yes. They found low levels of radiation directly on that spot.
Oh, okay.
But they found no additional evidence. So they had gathered all the, like the weird part about them finding no additional evidence on July 28th is they had already gone to the state and gathered evidence.
Yeah.
So like, were they hoping that they missed something? Assumingly, yes. Okay. So the investigation continued until September, when the Department of National Defense marked it as unsolved. Now, the part about this, like, I don't love is in their chronological ordering, you don't ever find out that the Department of National Defense is involved until they close the case. However, on the website, you can look at all the files, the paperwork from May 24th to September 13th. So it very well could have mentioned it. Like, I did, there's tons and tons and tons and tons of documents, and I didn't go through them all.
Of them being involved.
No, I mean just of everything, like from May 24th to September 13th on the Government of Canada website, you can view RCMP interviews, you can view the memo that I read, you can view like every documentation that's been about, like you can go on there and essentially get in the Government of Canada's brain.
That's crazy.
About this investigation, yeah. So they definitely could have mentioned more on when the Department of National Defense got involved, but on the timeline that they created on the file, it's not there. And I didn't want to dive through 3 months of files just to confirm when they got involved with that.
Obviously it was important enough to them to get involved at some point.
Yeah.
And it's also crazy that the government of Canada is out here just keeping all these detailed files.
Well, because it was not only marked as unsolved, but it's marked as UFO. Oh, so they acknowledge that it is UFO and unsolved.
I mean, technically UFO just means unidentified flying object, but like what else in 1967 could it have been where they're like, oh, we're going to mark this as UFO just for fun, even though we're the government and we're supposed to be the people that say that UFOs don't exist and aliens don't exist.
I mean, they never call it alien. It's literally just UFO, but okay,
still, it's weird because like, I feel like the government in the United States are always saying that UFOs don't exist and aliens don't exist, like, and they deny.
This object isn't even unidentified. It's not a UFO. I can tell you exactly what this is. Someone threw their placemat in the air.
It's a weather balloon.
Literally.
So I feel like it's weird that the government of Canada is just out here being like, we somewhat recognize this and we're going to document it and put it on the internet for people to research.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So that's it. That's all that there really is. I do have a couple other like little tidbits. Obviously, I said you can view the reports. It's on the Government of Canada website. I don't have the exact link, but if you search Falcon Lake UFO incident on Google, the Government of Canada website's stuff comes up. So the other thing, and I didn't source any of this information in here because it's so not credible. It's ridiculously uncredible, but there are several UFO investigators who have linked this incident with other reports in the Whiteshell area at the time. The reason I don't find it credible is because anything, someone could be like, I saw a bird. And if it's a weird bird, then this website documented it as a potential UFO sighting. So it's not very credible, but just the fact that in 1967, Whiteshell was like a hot zone for reports.
Oh, that's very interesting. And just to clarify, White Shell and Falcon Lake are in the same area.
So yeah, I think I said in the beginning, but White Shell is just north of Falcon Lake. Mm. So
within the same like city.
It's like
radius?
The provincial park outside. Yeah. It's like the provincial park outside. So like they just called it the Falcon Lake incident because it's within enough proximity that it's considered Falcon Lake. All the officers involved are Falcon Lake officers. Like Falcon Lake was their zone.
Yeah.
So yeah. So the only other thing that I really have about Falcon Lake is there was an interview with Steven's son where he kind of explains Steven's behavior after the incident. So this would have been his behavior in the entire time that this entire, like the investigations are going on. But he told his entire family he couldn't enjoy food. That food had no meaning, no taste. Like it just wasn't in existence to him. Because of that, he had trouble eating, keeping food down. He lost 20 pounds as well as experienced unexplained blackouts. That was all in the course of the year following. His son said that the blackouts finally stopped when the burns started to disappear.
That's super interesting.
So that's actually kind of like creepy.
Did he ever talk about being probed in any sort of way from the ship?
No. So like his story didn't have any like icky factor. I mean, to me, probe is an icky factor.
It's very icky.
Yeah. They didn't have anything like that. It was literally like, I saw a ship.
It was metallic. It
had violet. It burned me. The government got real involved real quick. Yeah, so the site was radioactive. Like, it was just pretty basic.
So he never even saw an alien.
I mean, not basic. I'm saying basically. Yeah, it's just your run-of-the-mill everyday experience.
It's just a circular disc that's 12 feet tall.
And crazy fucking crop circles.
Yeah, in the middle of a forest in a provincial park.
Yeah, no. No, like, but he never had any interactions besides the ship burning him. He never saw what was inside. Like, but it's still the most documented. And I feel like it's almost more documented because he didn't see anything, because it's now more believable.
Yeah.
Versus if he saw
little green men that were just like marching out of the UFO and they're like, we're going to probe you now.
We're going to probe you.
We'll probe you. Us with our Elmo / Smeagol voices.
It's a little Stitch. I was going for Stitch. Oh, it's not Stitch.
It's true.
So that's my story. And this is our podcast. And there's a cat licking my toes.
I can feel it too.
That's it, guys. I really, really hope that you enjoyed Falcon Lake. If you have any questions about it or you have any information that we missed that we could like readdress or bring back up, or like you just know stuff that we don't, or you know anything else really cool. Yeah.
Personal anecdotes. We would love to hear about those.
Yeah. So we have social media. Currently we're only set up for Instagram and we have an email.
Yeah. We're trying to get more, but like
we thought we'd keep it basic to start out, just so we can get some fans and hopefully you guys like us. Constructive criticism also always welcome. If you think we talk too fast,
too much. So that's a podcast.
Yeah, you're listening to us talk. If you think we talk too much, goodbye. Yeah, so you can email us at talesfromthemidnightsociety@gmail.com.
Yes. Instagram is also talesfromthemidnightsociety.
That's the handle.
Yep.
So check us out and have a good night.
Yeah, we're going to see you later. Bye.